What am I doing on the work show?
Karen.
Aya Maria. Aya Polina. Aya Sabina. Betie. Venga de prisa. Caramba, yo te quiero. Aya Maria. Aya Polina. Aya Sabina Petie, venga de prisa, caramba, yo te quiero.
WGXC Pledge Week edition of The Work Show. This week we are talking to a number of people in the WGXC community about their mix of volunteer work, spec work, and paying work. The first person we spoke with was Deborah Artman, a writer who does a program on Greene County Council for the Arts programs on a regular basis. We spoke with her in her Catskill apartment.
Both my parents were, my dad was a professor at Carnegie Mellon University and hugely immersed in his work. He was a physicist and an electrical engineer, and that's what he taught. And my mother taught, after going back to school when we were quite young, she ended up teaching psychiatric nursing at the local community college. And both of them were very involved with their work. So work was a job. I don't recall a sense of volunteerism. Well, as I recall, I did that job at Bob's Big Boy so I could buy myself a stereo. That was the goal. You know, I saw my own studies as being separate from the work that I did for money, especially initially. You know, my first summer after my freshman year of school, I renovated houses with a crew, and that money was to help me take a cross-country trip, which I did with a friend. We partly took Greyhound and partly hitchhiked across the country. It's probably the last year that was safe to do. Mm-hmm. But I didn't see them as connected.
Now, what's just to kind of skip to a different area? What is your work now?
I do a lot of things.
Yeah,
I'm a writer, and I write fiction and librettos, which is the text that that composers set to music. And so I write operas and oratorios and that kind of thing. I do journalism. I edit just about anything. I edit novels and short fiction and essays and magazines and anything with text. I make it better, basically. So I work frequently with artists and help them create artist statements for themselves. I help people with promotional materials if they're writing press releases for an event, not just in the arts. So I'm a wordsmith. I work with words and text.
How much time do you have to spend searching out that work?
Well, it's a combination. You know, there's an ebb and flow to being a freelance person, and sometimes the jobs come in all on top of each other, and sometimes there's a fallow period, and I may have to do a little more promotional work to get jobs in.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it's word of mouth. You know, I'm pretty good at what I do, so, and people are pretty happy with what I do, so, you know, word travels.
And how did you end up where you are now, coming out of Oberlin?
Well, Paul, it's like 30 years. My very first internship, Oberlin was part of an organization called the Great Lakes College Association, and it was a way of getting work in the arts in New York City and receiving credit for it. And I went the second half of my junior year to New York City, and I interned at Antaeus Magazine and the Echo Press. And Antaeus at that time was a highly esteemed literary magazine, sort of equal to the Paris Review. And the editor was Daniel Halpern, who was also, I believe, head of the writing department at Columbia. I'm not quite sure.
Mm-hmm.
And through that job, I was an editorial assistant, and I later they hired me over the summer to work on actually what became, I think it was their 10th anniversary edition or their 20th anniversary. It's up there somewhere. I think it's the 10th anniversary edition of the magazine, and so I got to read, you know, and make decisions on a lot of the work that came in, so that was kind of exciting. The managing editor at Antaeus later moved over to Thames and Hudson, and after I went back to Oberlin and completed my senior year, I moved back to New York City the day after graduation, and I ended up getting a job at Thames and Hudson, and I sort of launched a career in publishing. And publishing expanded to include journalism. And I also, in my own time, worked in the theater. I wanted to learn how to write dialogue better. So I started working in the theater, and I wanted to learn how to read my own work better out loud. And so those two impulses led me to do more theater. And I became part of this multicultural group of working artists and writers and theater professionals and incredibly talented people, two of whom took me under their wing, Lori Carlos and Jessica Hagedorn. And I sort of moved up from being like a production assistant on some of the projects to eventually like co-directing. And, you know, I've sort of made the decision to make New York City be what I wanted it to be. Did so many different jobs, yeah. Basically.
How did it balance out between what was paying and what wasn't paying? I mean, did it balance in terms of kind of your heart and mind, or did you have to sometimes reach, was there help coming from outside, from parents or whatever, or was there were there credit cards helping or... Or not helping?
I think there may have been an early Amex that got maxed out pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's one of those.
Or I don't know if it got maxed out, but I think I couldn't pay it, and then they took it away from me. You know, a lot of the theater work I did initially may have been volunteer, but eventually I was paid, and, you know, it wasn't a huge amount, but I was paid for my time, but I loved it so much that I didn't care that much. I was struggling a lot. Took me a while to find a place to live, as I recall. I slept on a lot of people's couches, and that was a bit discomforting for me. I'm not very good at that. Mm-hmm. I eventually found a place. It was a basement apartment on 4th Street, but at a certain point I was able to get stamped as an artist. You know, I presented documentation to the Department of Cultural Affairs, I think it was, and I did that. You know, I used to wake up every day and think, okay, where am I supposed to be today? Because in the mornings I would be at one place, and in the afternoons I would be another place. I mean, fortunately, they were all downtown, so I could run from one to the other. And then at night I was usually doing theater and rehearsals and that sort of thing. So... in the beginning, it was many jobs. And then at a certain point, I got more of a full-time job at a place called the City Kids Foundation, and I was the administrative director of their theater company. And so that took up more of my time, although I still was doing my own theater and performance projects on the side. And after I left that job, I ended up working at Doubleday, and that was a full-time job. And I worked there for, I mean, that was a consuming job. You know, it was more than 40 hours a week. But I still did my other stuff on the side. Mm-hmm. And then I got a fellowship, residency fellowship to the McDowell Colony. And when I came back from that, I returned to my job at Doubleday. The woman that I worked for was extremely generous and supportive of my writing. So I continued at Doubleday, and then I got a fellowship to the Fine Arts Work Center in Provincetown, and that was a 7-month residency. And I knew it would mean the end of my full-time job, and I was very conflicted about whether to take it or not. And I went into my boss and I sort of laid it out in front of her, and she said, "Deborah, you don't turn down experience." And she said how important it was to take risks. And that began my world and career as a freelance writer and editor. I never had a full-time job after that. I had teaching gigs. Mm-hmm. You know, I taught at various colleges and as a guest writer at colleges, but never a long-term full-time job.
Do your own projects slip behind the paying ones?
Definitely.
And does that feel necessary? Does it hurt? Does it feel?
I don't think it's good. I admire people who have more discipline than I do and will do their own work, you know, first thing every day, who get up very early, mm-hmm. and you know, make a commitment to getting so many pages done a day. Or I don't work like that. I need a lot of room in my brain in order to have my voice enter the picture. So when I am working on a lot of other projects, it's hard for me to hear my own voice. And I don't think that my way is a good way. I you know.
It's Pledge Week at WGXC, which is kind of where the focus this time on balancing volunteer and spec work and creative work and comes in. You're doing some regular things for GXC.
Well, I'm, you know, one thing about being a writer and editor is that I love is that you're always in a state of learning. I think that's really important to me. It must be one of the motivational factors for why I chose what I do. And the great thing about publishing was all these ideas would pass across my desk. And any book that I edit, you know, I'm learning about a person or a topic that I didn't know about before, or maybe knew only a little bit about. So I feel like I've had these, you know, I called publishing the graduate school of culture. You know, I was always learning. And when I take on volunteer projects like the work that I do for WGXC, I love it because I'm learning. You know, I'm learning a new art form in terms of learning how to organize a piece for radio and how that differs from print, and, you know, how you need to adjust things. For me, as long as I'm learning, I'm okay with the volunteer work, and I always feel like it will lead eventually to something that's paying. That's been my life experience, that anything that I've done for free eventually leads to paying work. So you know, like my sister, when she struggles with finding a job, I always say, go volunteer somewhere. It'll lead to something. You know, they'll see that you're smart and good at what you do. And I think that's just the nature of the beast. I mean, certainly there are some situations where it's always only going to be volunteer work. But still, you know, people hear you or they become aware of you, and it leads to something else. So it's a... I think that our way of working is a more dynamic way of working. You know, you don't know what's coming around the pike. There isn't necessarily job security. But the on the other side is you're always learning. I'm a big believer in bartering. And I think that many artists live that way. I mean, it's unfortunate the electric company doesn't live that way. Or one's landlord. You know, I do that a lot with people. You know, I'll edit something for them and they'll make me a great dinner, or, you know, give me a recommendation for something in the future. I'm tutoring a young man right now in essay writing and helping him prepare for the SATs. And in exchange, he helped me create my website. And so he has skills I don't have. I have skills he doesn't have. And we share. And I think that's a great way of moving through society. I think there should be more of that.
Santa Maria, Santa Teresa, Santa Anna, Santa Susanna, Santa Cecilia, Santa Coppelia, Santa Domenica, Mary Angelica.
Upon this earth and the this go.
How does one talk about WGXE without talking to its illustrious station manager, Lynn Sloniker? We caught up with Lynn during the midst of Pledge Week at the WGXE offices in Hudson.
How have you balanced making money and doing what you love to do?
that's the million-dollar question. No, no pun intended. Especially since moving here to Hudson, because I did, well, what I really like to do is to write and to, you know, to talk about and to learn about education. That's my passion. That's what I'm very interested in. And for a while I did that for a living for both local newspapers and as I had done for years before outside of this area. But I left that job, and then, long story short, I decided to do what I was doing before, but do it myself, do it independently as a blogger, mm-hmm. which of course came without compensation. So that necessitated finding other work in order to at least continue to make some money, and it is a tough balance because you find yourself in these positions where you're, it's the allocation of time question. My husband and I both are have been until recently. Both of us were independent contractors, and he struggles with the same thing. He's an artist, and how much you find yourself always. There's this line between what is my work and what is their work. And finding mm-hmm. that balance. So it's a different way of thinking it in terms of volunteer versus paid work. And how much do you spend actually recruiting work? That was a challenge that I always found was huge around here and outside of the area. You have to have a level of consciousness about parenting that I know my parents never had to go through in the sense that it was just understood that was my mother's job, and my father just kind of did, I don't mean to say just did his thing, but he did his thing. They were very, very specifically drawn lines of responsibility, and in our family, it's something very different. It's always been, it's always changing. It's always changing. Even things as simple as going to the grocery store. Mm-hmm.
what your role is here, what your job is here, and then the question is, how much does that feel like it's outside of the other balance of volunteerism? But I mean, given the number of hours you put in versus the amount that you're making, it that changes the equation too.
Well, it does, because it actually, this has been a conversation that we've been having here about the fact that we're all allocated. That is, among the staff, we have 3 paid staff people who work in the station. We all have different schedules. We overlap on Wednesdays. And that's the only day that all of us are actually in. But when you consider the actual time we put in, we're all full-time employees. But we are paid for, in my case, I'm paid for a 4-day week, others for 3 and a 4-day week. So, so a large part of what I do, even though it is part of my job responsibility, sort of would fall technically into volunteerism. You know, my day usually starts pretty early, and I do news, as you used to do.
Mm-hmm.
Get up and do all of that at home, do email, as sort of a way to get a leg up on the day, to know what to anticipate when I come into the studio. And you have your short-term and your long-term needs that you have to fulfill. As station manager, I am the administrative head for WGXC. I also now have a seat on the council, so I'm dealing with those kinds of things, personnel, fundraising, more on the administrative side as opposed to the outreach side, but there certainly is outreach in just about everything I do. We all kind of overlap. And then I have my news responsibilities, where I sort of manage that blog and keep an eye toward what's happening in the bigger world so that we can let our programmers and listeners know about it. So it really pretty much runs the gamut. I also, you know, if programmers need help, I have to be in a position to help out with things as simple as, you know, turning switches and starting computer programs. So.
And what makes it all worth it then in the long run? What?
Well, I believe in what we're doing here. I believe that, you know, for me as a news person, I'm very much invested in the idea that knowledge is the basis of a full-functioning democracy. We have an obligation to keep people informed, to be fair, and to be able to communicate and provide people with what they need to live their lives and to govern themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of this overarching idea. But, you know, quite honestly, on a day-to-day basis, it's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Because the project is so young and so much has been accomplished already, there's tremendous momentum on the part of the staff and just about everybody involved. Because I find most programmers are here because they have a passion about what they do,
mm-hmm.
whether it be the music that they play or the conversation they want to have.
Now, while you've gotten swallowed with all the work here, have you been able to maintain the blog in your freelance life?
Not as much as I'd like. It's been tough. So that is a struggle that I... That's why when you asked me about having this conversation, that was something that was... It's in the front of my mind right now. It's something that I'm struggling with, is finding the balance so I can continue to do that work. Because it is important to me, and I think it's important in the community. I get a lot of positive support from people about what I write and what I do. And truth is, there are a lot of people who look to me for that kind of information and guidance through information. When you're talking about balancing your life, you now actually have to work to create that structure for yourself. When I think about the difference between how I grew up and the household I grew up in and the one my children are growing up in, the lines were very clear. Work was a very finite, if not, you know, it was a mysterious thing that what my father did, because he went off and he worked in an office, and yeah, we could see the plant and understand what he was, on some level, that he was part of that process. But we never we never really experienced his work firsthand. It was something he went and did alone, and then he came home to us. Now, with the way my children have been raised, they know what my husband does intimately. They are with him in the studio and have been since they were infants. They know what I do, mainly because they're in the schools that I've been writing about. So there is that kind of... there aren't the walls between work, and it's not a structure. It's so much a part of life, mm-hmm. as opposed to something that is you do, you make money, and then you come home, and then your life exists in another compartment. It's more integrated. And I think that's a good thing. But the challenge in that, then, is how do you prevent work from overtaking every aspect of your life?
And how do you discuss it on a community basis or in a political convention so that it has real meaning?
Right. Well, I think that that's absolutely right, because this whole idea that we have an unemployment rate of X and that means that that's a specific group of people who are out of work, that doesn't take into account how many people, like what you have here in Columbia and Greene counties, that have to work two or three jobs because if they had one job, they couldn't pay the bills. And also just the people who have simply dropped out of the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, yeah, I think politically the conversation is really out of date, because that seems to be geared more towards the sort of traditional idea of work,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to this sort of gray area that we're growing.
So I guess kind of behind it all is also rethinking the relationship between this giant pot of money we call the economy and what we all take from it on an individual basis via what we call work,
mm-hmm.
to survive and spend and keep the whole thing flowing somehow.
Right.
That all of that is in flux right now.
That's right, including a definition of the middle class.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who traditionally has spent the money. But, you know, when you're freelancing and maybe two-thirds of your work life is paid and another third is not, you're not working with, you know, you have less of the pot than maybe you would if you were a plumber with full-time employment. Yeah, mm-hmm. So...
Or you control a pocket of capital that you can just grow.
Absolutely, yeah, so...
So then the end message is that everybody should just send in pledges to WGXC this week, right?
That's right.
Much of nothing can make a man ill at ease. One man's temper rises where another man's temper might freeze. Now it's that day of confession, and we cannot mock a soul. But when there's too much of nothing, no one has control. It's all been written in the book. And when there's too much of nothing, nobody should look.
Say hello to Valerie. Say hello to Vivian.
can cause some men to sleep on nails. It can cause others to eat fire. Everybody's doing something. I've heard it in a dream. But when there's too much of nothing, it just makes a fella mean.
Karen Schomer, I did manage to get her roped onto the work show this time. We caught up with her at her day job at the Spotty Dog, where she tends bar and handles requests about books.
Well, I supported myself as a writer for almost all of my adult life, which is really unusual and extraordinary. Like, from 1990, when I first became a freelance writer, until about a year and a half ago, I was like a full-time writer. But in the time that I've lived upstate, which I moved upstate about 8 years ago, I lived before that in Jersey City and Hoboken. When I moved upstate, I slowly was sort of doing less freelance writing and was getting more into creative writing. And by about a year or two ago, my freelancing had dropped to the point that, you know, rather than try to hustle and rebuild that, mm-hmm. which I knew was going to be sort of probably unfulfilling, you know, I just thought, well, I'll really try to throw myself into the creative writing, which is incredibly challenging and incredibly fulfilling, but not lucrative, because it's really something I'm developing. So I'll get a day job. That's what artists do. They get day jobs. So I picked up the phone and called Alan Kuhn, the owner of the Spotty Dog, and started working here about a year and a half ago. So that's my little income. And then I do a show. I do a weekly radio show, which I don't get paid anything, and at WGXC, but which is incredibly fun. Mm-hmm. And I still do occasional freelance work. Like right now, I'm working on a freelance piece about John Cale of the Velvet Underground, and I just interviewed him on the phone the other day for this website, emusic.com. I contribute to them occasionally. Mm-hmm. So I pick up a little money there. And then I'm a parent, and you don't get paid to do that either. So I do a lot of things for little or no money, but almost all of them, I mean, I feel very fortunate. They're almost all things that I really love doing and enjoy, and it's been a conscious choice of mine to sort of live with less and, you know, try to have a better quality of life, basically. And it's, I mean, it was really a combination for me of conscious choice and sort of the world that I had been in really disappearing. You know, so many people got laid off from newspaper and magazine jobs that the pool of sort of freelancers competing for each available job really grew, and the terms just dropped. And yeah, it's just not at all the world that it used to be. I mean, there's just such a huge glut of sort of writing out there on the internet, but the kind of world that I was a part of, where you really were, you know, you crafted work and you had layers of editors who helped you craft it and proofreaders and fact checkers and this whole very vigorous system of journalism has really shrunk. What I think that the real shame is that so many people have become accustomed to this lower level of skill in the writing that's out there. You know, people reading the web don't care if a story isn't crafted the way it was, you know, 10 or 20 years ago, people are really accepting, like, criticism that's off the cuff and not thought through, you know, record reviews that are not well informed, you know, people who don't put the time in. Everything is so fast, and it's really, you know, thinking is a time consuming process. You know, even like something as simple as writing a record review, you know, you have to think, you have to listen to it again and again, or you have to listen to that record again and again, and listen to a person's previous work and develop actual thoughts and ideas, and that's just not something that you do in like a couple of hours. So I guess my point was that readers are accepting such a lower level. I was super directed and super focused from a really young age. I mean, when I got very serious about writing when I was in eighth grade, and then by the time I was about 15, I was writing about pop music and like reading Rolling Stone and wanting to do that. You know, when I was 15, I read a Bruce Springsteen biography by Dave Marsh, and I was like, I want to do that. I want to have an excuse to meet Bruce Springsteen and talk to him. College, I worked at my college radio station, and by the time I was out of college, I was writing for fanzines. I had an internship at Rolling Stone, so I was really very much about like writing about music. Mm-hmm. And so I was an intern at Rolling Stone, and then out of college, I was an editorial assistant for a year or two, and just moved up. Mm-hmm. Went from Us magazine to a magazine called 7 Days in 1988 that was like a sort of weird new New York weekly, and then went to work at Spin and was the record reviews editor at Spin in like 1989, and then went freelance in 90.
Was it hard going freelance, or was it just everybody was doing it?
No, at that point I just had enough. I had a friend from 7 Days who was working for Mademoiselle and hired me to do a monthly music column. So I knew I had regular monthly income. I had started freelancing for the New York Times, writing record reviews. So I just thought, hey, between those two things, I'll be okay.
Thoughts about work these days? What is work constitute?
I think there's so many people. I mean, up here, there's a lot of people creating their own life patterns and income strategy. You know, people are putting together incomes in interesting ways and trying to balance stuff they love with stuff that can earn an income. So there's, I think there's less of that, like, hey, I have this job and I go to an office 40 hours a week kind of life out there. You know, I when I think about sort of jobs in the traditional sense and how we have less of them in this country, my own idea about it, which is absolutely unschooled, and I don't know if it's got any basis in reality, is we don't make stuff here anymore in this country. You know, we don't really manufacture that much stuff anymore. You know, China manufactures most of our stuff. So, I mean, I have that sense looking around, driving around, seeing sort of empty industrial buildings all around Hudson. You know, something was happening here that doesn't happen anymore. Go up to Troy and see these, like, crumbling, you know, Gilded Age palaces that don't have a purpose anymore. You know, there's obviously something that was there that's now gone. So, I mean, I can see that shift. I think that how, you know, doing a music show sort of helps the overall fabric of the radio station is the way that music helps the overall fabric of the culture. Mm-hmm. You know, just that, you know, a beautiful song well played or an idea presented in a song in a way that you hadn't thought of it, or just a magical melody or a song that you loved that you hear again. You know, all these things are, you know, not essential. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not like eating and breathing, but they're part of this like sort of marvelous thing that makes us love being human. So I try to think that doing a radio show that just puts music out there that people aren't going to get without it is sort of is a contribution in some way. I feel fortunate to be able to put time into things that don't pay anything. You know, it feels like a luxury almost. And it's part of what moving up here has bought me. You know, living upstate where it's cheaper, you know, you can live more cheaply. And you don't have to be, you know, I don't have to work at Newsweek anymore 80 hours a week and be completely consumed in my work. I can sort of splinter off into different parts of, you know, myself that need nurturing. So I feel fortunate. I mean, I really wish I could make a little more money. But, you know, you can't really control that too much. You know, you can't really make the exact right amount that you need. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, then maybe you make too much, and so you buy a bigger house, and then you have to keep making. You know what I mean? Like, money is a weird thing. I don't know. It's good not to let it decide too many things for you. It can really take over.
Dicen que por las noches nomás se le iba en puro llorar. Dicen que no comía, nomás se le iba en puro tomar. Juran que el mismo cielo se estremecía al oír su llanto. Cómo sufría por ella, que hasta en su muerte la fue llamando. Ay, 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 ay. Cantaba
Hi, I'm Paul Smart, and I want to thank you for listening to this week's edition of The Work Show. The music we heard included Franco Lumumba and OK Jazz from a 1959 recording, Yolo Tango from some end credits they did for a Japanese film, Jane Sibbery and Katie Lang doing Calling All Angels, Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass doing With a Little Help from My Friends, Bob Dylan and the band from the Basement Tapes doing Too Much of Nothing, Bruce Springsteen, the great boss, doing his song from Darkness at the Edge of Town, Factory, and finally, the wonderful Caetano Veloso. Do remember to call in your pledges to WGXC right now so that we can keep working here for you.
Saber.